Hi, this is Dr. Lisa from the Dr. Lisa Soul Senti podcast, and I'm going to welcome you this morning. We are going to talk about a book that I have written. I believe we did it 10 years ago, believe it or not, the first edition. But the second edition has come out, and it's called The Over-Tilted Child. And I'm really blessed to share this with you because the new edition, it is awesome. We have changed a few things, but the best thing is that we added new strategies. So what is this book about? It is about creating sensational classrooms for children with sensory processing disorder, autism spectrum disorders, ADD, ADHD. And how did this come about for me is one of my stories. And I explain it here in the book. It's on my blog if you've read some things. But real quick, the book is something I created when I was struggling with my son, Luke, who is now 23, so time has passed, but this book has gotten into so many hands, has helped so many parents and teachers and children change lives, and I'm just so, so excited about the new edition. Because as you, I always say, as you birth a creation or a product or a gift or something that you're making, it always gets better and better as you as it ages. It's kind of like wine, right? So I created this book because my son, when he was about 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, was having a hellacious time at school and nothing that I've ever experienced or even witnessed. And I'm sure that people have gone through this more in the special education arena, but that wasn't my experience going through school myself as a child or my husband. So as a parent, we were in kind of uncharted territories or waters. And what was happening was that, you know, by like 10, 10:30, 11 o'clock, they would be calling us to come get them. And I'd go there, you know, running from my practice. And he would be in the corner, you know, rocking, hitting his head, pulling on his skin, kind of like stimming. But at the time, we were just like, what's going on? Why is he doing this? So sometimes he would have, they call meltdowns, and he would actually maybe push his chair over or empty his desk. I wouldn't say throw things or throw his desk or anything like that, but he definitely would have a very frustrated moment where you would walk in and there would be a mess and they'd be like, look what he did, look what he did. And we didn't really have that challenge at home. We had different challenges at home. It was more like if I put a sock on his foot, he would freak out. If certain tags in his shirt, a lot of sensory issues. And at the time, I knew it was sensory, but I didn't really know there was something called sensory processing disorder. And we didn't know anything about Asperger's at the time. Most people didn't. So that puts us in that whole category. And he would just get really, really frustrated. So even school just frustrated him, created so much anxiety for him. And it wasn't, when I say hellacious, it was really hard. And the whole book is I wrote the book because what was happening was Luke seemed to be a crusader for kids behind him, kids younger than him. We would be figuring things out day by day by day, working with teachers, and just even sometimes it was arguing with administration and really, really difficult things. And wasn't just school. We found out it would be if we took them to like restaurants, if we went to the boardwalk, if we went to the beach, if we went to a birthday party. I'm trying to think of things that you would do, right? It happened within my family events. So we were really, really starting to become isolated and just staying in our home. And that was an easy place for him because I think he felt safe. I think he knew the structure of the home. He knew our routine, right? So it was a very safe thing for him. There was no smells and noises that he wasn't used to. So that was always the safe place. And I became a hermit. Like it just became me with the kids at home. It get to the point where it's so bad. And when I use the word hellacious, I really, really mean it, because I actually had to give up my career and stop working for 6 years. And, you know, we went on one income. And that was a time where we were taking him to therapy, and the therapy included, you know, speech, OT, social worker therapy. So I know we worked on behavioral trying to think, there was a plethora of things, and it was testing. So, you know, you had autism testing, auditory processing to testing, central processing to testing, sensory processing. So physical therapy, OT, chiropractic, you know, which I am a chiropractor and nutritionist. So thank God for him and for me that he had that arena for me, because I had the background in neurology. My best friend was a OT, so I had that in my ballpark as well. But here's the thing. There's two arenas that I want to tell you about. And one is obviously the book, because I want to get this book into as many people's hands as possible. It's so life-changing and has been. And I know this because in our schools, I found it on so many guidance counselors' desks. And I've seen them take pictures with it. I've seen people that have come to see me. I used to do advocacy for this specific thing. I used to go into meetings and help people with child study teams and 504s. I no longer do all that, but the book was written because it's really what I did. So I'm sharing like the secrets, right? The solutions, the we call them adaptive strategies, modifications. And I was telling people the story over and over and over and over again. I was telling people how we helped Luke, because as we were moving forward into the years, definitely by the time we got to 7th and 8th grade, he was starting to flourish. He was starting to overcome a lot of these things. And people were asking me, you know, with their 5-year-old, their 7-year-old, their 8-year-old, their 10-year-old, their 12-year-old, what did you do? What do I do? And guidance counselors and teachers were sending people to me. So I wrote the book because I couldn't keep up with the emails. I couldn't keep up with helping people. It was just overwhelming. And so that's what this book is for. It's really my conversation to you. Here's what we did. Here's what you need to do. Try these things. So the first half of the book is about going out there and getting the diagnosis, the correct one. And I know this is a chapter in there about labeling your child. It's actually, it's a controversial topic, because in medicine, we label everything. We diagnose everything and we give it a name. But in reality, in raising your children in your home, that's not necessarily always a good thing, right? You don't really want to just slap a label on them and tell them they're ADD or ADHD. And in some circumstances, they might need to know this, because they might need it to know it to understand it. Some children will feel better about themselves going, oh, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm different because of this. And this is how we work around it. This is how we cope with it. This is what we do. But to slap a label on people or kids isn't necessarily always got a good connotation to it either, because we really aren't these things. We are a soul in a human body. And we're here for an experience, and we shouldn't label ourselves, you know, or define ourselves based upon some of these human terms, because sometimes that's really holds people back. So in the terms of labeling, I do suggest it in the terms of education, academia, trying to get the medical world to speak with the academia world, trying for the teacher to understand that this child isn't just purposely being belligerent, this child isn't being a bad child, they're not coming to school every day to upset you. You know, most kids want to go to school and have fun. They want to be included. They want to be with their friends, and they want to learn, and definitely want to please the teacher. So it's always, we're going to ask ourselves why. Why is the child behaving? What's going on here? Why is this happening? My son would like write on a ditto, and if he was going to erase something and it didn't come out perfectly, or if he erased it in a little hole, you know how the hole forms in the paper, it would just set him off. So why? Why would this upset him? The sounds of the, because I'm trying to think so far back, the sounds of the fire drills and the smells in the schools and the sound of somebody, maybe the child next to him is tapping the pencil, you know, and rightfully so, the child just wants to tap the pencil and it's just getting to him. But why? This is what the book's about. So the first half of the book is really about trying to figure out what your child is going through, what is, I don't want to say wrong, because I really don't define my child by this, but in order to have a plan of action on how to help your child, you kind of have to know what's going on. You have to know the why. Why is your child behaving this way? And there's lots of reasons. There's lots of things that it could possibly be. So the first half is really talking about, I let you know you're not alone, because this journey for many people, they just feel so alone. And I can tell you, it started off in preschool, and every kid that, you know, was picking up their kid, they're running out there with their beautiful little, you know, art project or whatever they did for the day. And then my son had nothing. And the teacher was always like, Mrs. Solcenti, can we talk? Can you stay after? Can you talk? So I never had the child running in my arms, mommy, you know, with the cute art project with your, you know, your child did great today. That's not what I had ever, maybe till high school, it started turning around. And so we're going to talk about that. You're not alone. I support you. There's also a chapter on it's not your fault, because you're going to blame yourself. Teachers will probably blame yourself. They make you feel like a bad parent. Family might blame you, telling you're, you know, a bad parent, you know, discipline correctly. So it's not your fault. And really understand, adversity is the first path to truth. Like, when things aren't going right and things are really hard, it's going to help you find the truth behind it and really open your eyes. So for me, it really, really, it threw me in the world of special education, and it's just an amazing world. And the people I met are just amazing. Teachers, the mothers, the kids. And so really, really got down to peeling the onion, you know, peeling away the onions as a human and getting down to your truth. There's signs and clues of an over-tilted child. So the over-tilted child, Luke came up with that name. So if you go to the very last chapter in the book, it's a conversation with Luke, and he always told me he felt over-tilted. So I'm not going to give it away. You can read it. It's a great, great conversation with Luke. But over-tilted is someone that is overstimulated, overwhelmed. The nervous system is always on. And we talk about the sympathetic energy. We talk about, think about a light switch. And the light switch is the sympathetic. It's the on. It's the fight or flight energy. And your child's brain and your child's nervous system is always going. And when I lecture on this, I put up a, so you can try to visualize this, I put up a picture of a brain, and coming from the brain is the spine, the spinal cord and the spine. So it might be the skull with the vertebra, or it might be the brain with the spinal cord, but that's it. And I have that picture, and I say, this is your child, this is it. Don't worry about the face. Don't worry about the hair. Don't worry about the arms. Don't worry about the outside human feature. This is it right here. This is what we are working with. When they do something wrong, this is what's doing it. The brain is doing it. The brain is choosing, you know, an inappropriate response to a stimulus that comes in. So this is what this is all about. And I explain this in the first half of a book, what this overwhelming overstimulation of the on energy, why information is coming into the brain. It's coming in through sensory, right? So it's coming in sight, smell, sound, touch, taste. And there's another one called proprioception, which is where your body is in space and time. And that comes from the joint and receptors in the joint. So that's where all the information comes in. It goes into the brain, and it has to get integrated properly, where the brain is integrating that information, trying to understand it. So the brain is really the computer, right? And what happens for some children is this information comes in, it either comes in incorrectly or it comes in and then it's integrated or interpreted incorrectly. And what we see on the outside is the output. We see that an inappropriate reaction, response, behavior. And what that is the output that comes out, because what has to happen in the brain is information comes in, it's interpreted, it's integrated, and then there's going to be a reaction, there's going to be a response, there's going to be an output. So whatever the brain tells the body to do. So that's really, really important, because what we're seeing is a beautiful little child with this, you know, cute little face and the hair and the, you know, tiny little features, and their output or their response or their behavior is inappropriate, inaccurate, doesn't fit the time, doesn't fit the message, or it's over exaggerated, right? So we get upset and we get mad, or because we try to keep correcting the child, and the brain just is like, nope. So this brain is on overdrive, it's on overstimulation, it's integrating sensory information inappropriately, incorrectly. So that's what you need to understand. So that's the first thing I always do, is I put that brain up there and I put the nervous system up there, and I'm like, this is what we're dealing with. This is your child. This is it. And then I always layer, I try to layer a picture of a child over that. And I'm saying, this cute kid isn't coming to school or going to a birthday party or going, you know, to a restaurant to misbehave. Now, there are gray areas here where you have a kid that's neurologically fine and maybe has learned poor behaviors or hasn't been disciplined or hasn't learned manners. And they're just, you know, maybe allowed to run wild. So they're a child that just needs discipline or they might need structure, but they don't have a neurological issue. That's what this first half of the book is for, is asking yourself why, asking if you should label your child, well, we discussed that, and then where to go for help. And find out, you know, is this the nervous system? Is this the brain that your child is struggling with? Before you start just disciplining them and the teachers start yelling at them and they're always in trouble and they're always in timeout and they're always in that red stupid thing that we get into, and how teachers, if you're listening, you have to read this book, because that thing where they put them in the land of no neighbors, or they, I don't even know what they do today, but it was just ridiculous stuff, and their way of disciplining the classroom is a joke. It'll never work for these type of children. So, you know, I know for us it was sometimes the traffic light where it was like, you know, a clothespin would go to, I don't know, red, yellow, green. And green was, you're being a good student today, right? So of course all the good students are always in the green. And the struggling students are always in the red. They sometimes get themselves to yellow. And I remember my son would be in the green for like a fleeting second. And then he would feel bad about himself always going to school. And school just became this, you know, yucky place, a place that just was not nice because of the way he could never overcome. You want a child like this to overcome their brain problem, their neurological overstimulation, their sensory processing, auditory processing, central processing problem. You know, you want them to just figure it out and overcome it. You can't even figure out or overcome it for as an adult for them. Or so you want them to do it. You want them to do all of that. And when they don't, you put them in the red, or, you know, they can never get the reward that all the other kids get if you're doing tokens and stuff like that. So there's just certain ways to do the tokens correctly or the points correctly. And so I go over that in the second half of the book. But in the first half of the book, it's really looking at children. We talk about children 0 to 3. We break it down to 3 to 5 because there's all different types of things you can do. And we talk about classification, K through 12. We talk about going to the right doctor for this. I can't stress this one is really, really, really important. Please read about that, because I have found a lot of parents that came to me, they just don't do it this way. They don't do it the way I have it set up. So they're later down the road, it falls apart for them and they don't understand why. And that's because they didn't go to the correct doctor. They didn't get the correct diagnosis and they didn't get the correct paperwork for the school system. If you have everything set up correctly and you bring it to the school system, you are going to be able to get pretty much almost everything for your child. But if you don't do it that way and you just come in with this little paper, this little prescription with ADD, ADHD, and you hand it to the school, that's like every kid. So really it doesn't work. A lot of people go to the psychiatrist or the psychologist and they just get this paper and they say, my kid's on a med, this is my kid, or my kid's not on med, this is my kid. And the problem with that is you're not really going to get the strategies that are available to you. There's services too that are available to you. And if you don't have it set up correctly, you can't get a lot of stuff that you're entitled to. So that's what this first half of the book is. And we talk about the different classrooms. Before we actually create the classroom to help the disability, and of course we have to diagnose what the disability is, in order to create the classroom correctly, I also talk about the different settings that are available. So think about it as, you know, they're going to go into a room. Which room do we want them in? And then once they're in the room, we're going to create the room to help them fit the disability. So there's different types of settings that your child has available to them. And that's the first half of the book. I also have little sections in some of the chapters for a little note to the teachers, so you can understand like what the parent's going through as they're going through this phase that I talk about. The second half of the book are the strategies. And this is a really, really unique section. It's fun. It's the classrooms of the future. I talk about the preventive style classroom. It's a classroom that is going to focus on behavior. You know, the child's inability to cope neurologically. And the classroom is focusing that, the classroom is understanding that the child's poor behavior whether it's ADD, ADHD, focus, can't get the homework done. Sometimes it's a bunch of these. Can't pay attention, possibly that they're disruptive. It's a form of communication that something's not working, something's not right. And students with neurological problems related to the sensory motor issues, they quite often perceive events within a school day as threatening, right? So they're going to school every day feeling threatened, feeling unsafe, feeling horrible about themselves. And they may have an inflexible and abstract way of thinking. Yeah, and the problems they might have with processing information. So therefore, for their bodies feel threatened and feel fearful of their surrounding environment, right? These children often feel like they, nothing they do is right or is acceptable to the teacher or the principal, because a lot of these know the principal very well, and that no one likes them or that they're just stupid, right? That was a big thing that my son just felt about himself. He just always called himself stupid. And it is imperative that these children understand that their poor behavior or their failures, that they see it that way, are due to neurological medical problems and not due to a lack of effort or desire to do well, or it's not due to your teacher not liking you or anything like that. And they must embrace that their special needs are not their fault, and in time that they will overcome many of their inabilities or their perceived failures. And this is a really big thing, because the children that feel that they're failures or that they have no control over their environment, they may respond with disruptive and negative behaviors, meltdowns, or inadvertently withdraw, right? And just really, really be difficult in being able to achieve whatever you want to achieve, the goal you want to get done. And perhaps these are the only coping skills that this child will know at that time. They go from first grade to second grade to third grade to fourth grade, and it's just the same thing, right? Or so maybe one year is worse than the other. So consequently of all this stuff, the teacher must remain calm, embrace the child, and understand that the problem at hand, so the teacher can plan preventative and I would say preventative strategies, adaptive strategies, and manage this over-tilted child successfully. The goal is always to guide the child through the turbulent times and empower the child. Remove that threatening, help me, I have no control of my environment, I don't know what's going on feeling. Take away that I'm stupid, I'm not good enough, everybody doesn't like me. And create a warmth, a security, and a feeling of, I can do this, I have control, and I feel safe here. And that goes back to that picture of the brain with the spinal cord. Well, the child can understand that I want to control this. Like, I don't have any control. My brain is controlling me. This on energy is like controlling me, and I don't know how to do this. So the child's teacher must be a step ahead, having a knee-jerk reaction to any and all extraneous factors that could possibly trigger a behavioral problem in the classroom. And behavior doesn't always have to be that they're bad. It could be, again, it could be some behavior that's just unwanted by the teacher, unacceptable, or causing the child to not reach the academic goal that the teacher wants. It could be, I know my son could never hand in homework. That was a big problem too. And we go through all this in the book. The teacher must be capable of identifying things that may trigger problems that include, but are not limited, sensory stimulation, motor issues, problems with transitioning, certain subjects that they're struggling with, demands of a teacher or a task being too difficult, waiting, standing, sitting, staying still, feelings of being alone, embarrassed, being bullied, not fitting in, all of these things, right? The competition, the winning, the losing, the poor timing of a situation, the lack of visual, tactile, and academic support, the finding of a task that's unpleasant, or they're bored. These are really just a few of the possibilities that actually can trigger an over-tilted child to have an inappropriate response, be disruptive, be uninterested, not perform well academically, right? Or be a behavioral issue. And again, I mentioned before, maybe the child next to him is tapping their pencil, telling him to stop tapping his. Maybe he's doing it, right? And he's annoying the other kids. The ditto in front of him may have too many math problems on it. Maybe there's not enough room to write the answer and he's freaking out. Maybe the pencil keeps breaking. It's just so many situations. So I also found that another thing, a question to always ask is the room, the classroom that they're in, supportive? Is the classroom overwhelming? What is going on with this academic environment? Does it fit the disability? The child has the right to be in a classroom. That classroom, that environment fits the disability. It's actually a law. Does the child know what to do next? Sometimes the anxiety comes from just really not understanding what to do next. You know, you take out your books. That could be ambiguous to them. Which book? Where is it? I don't know. Where are we? We're on the page. And it just escalates to anxiety. Is the child aware of his schedule for the day? We talk about, is the child prepared visually to what his expectations or her expectations are from one transition to the next? That's another problem sometimes, that they just don't know what to do next and they have so much anxiety over it. And we just solve that by a little schedule on the desk. So they know, they can look, okay, this is what's coming. It's really simple things. Is a timeline provided? Does a child need to fight, move, or have an outlet for restless energy? I talk about a great thing here, and I'm going to have, I think, a podcast next on. I'm just going to roll right into some of the strategies here. But we talk about Luke's restless energy, and this one teacher came up with a great, great solution. The teacher had an old desk from his school. It was one of those old schoolhouse desks, and he had it in there, and Luke was obsessed with it. So he let Luke, I guess for the first hour or two, be at his desk and then do math, I think, at that desk. So, you know, and Luke knew when he could move over to the new desk and just thought it was great. There is just so many possibilities, smells, sounds. The teacher really must be ready for any possibilities. And we talk about the teacher of the future, the classroom of the future, and we go into the strategies. I give you a checklist. I talk to teachers too, because there's a little section, a little note to the teachers. And then we talk about bridging the gap between the parent, teacher, and child, and try to really get this classroom to work in favor of the child's disability. I am going to end this podcast here because I always try to be under 20. And I went a little bit over, but I'm going to roll right into the next podcast and talk about some of these ideas. But I really, really, really would love for you to get this book or get this book in the hands of anyone that really needs help with school. And that's how this happened. This is just my explanations, my letters. This is like having me with you because I can't possibly talk to everybody about it anymore. And so grab this. Again, it's for educational purposes. I can't treat anything. I'm not treating ADD or ADHD here on the podcast, but this is just a phenomenal book. It's changed. It's life-changing. Thank you for your time. Bye.